Go ahead, Ashley. Thank you.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you great.
Great. Okay, so thank you, Melissa. Now we're going to speak about the other order that was signed by President Trump last Wednesday, and that's the Executive Order on Interior Enforcement. For those of you who are not on the webinar, that is slide 7. It's entitled Interior Enforcement EO. So this particular executive order has many provisions that will affect how the Department of Homeland Security will work with immigrants and look to engage immigrants in our interior. There are 5 major takeaways from this executive order on interior enforcement. One is that it drastically expands the priorities that DHS will use for who to apprehend and deport. To this point, I think it's very important to understand what exactly the executive order did. So the executive order sets forth new enforcement priorities and replaces the prior Obama administration priority enforcement categories and greatly broadens the categories with which individuals may now be considered a priority for deportation and removal. Among those things that have been broadened is the order includes individuals who have been charged with any criminal offense, and also those individuals whom immigration officers deem to be a risk to public or national safety. So this is a broad expansion of what we currently see, what we have seen under the Obama administration of priorities. In the past 2 years, the Obama administration, using their priority enforcement categories, had done a more nuanced approach of looking to deport those who have actually been convicted of felonies, particularly aggravated felonies, or those that proved a demonstrated risk to community or national safety and security. Here, we're seeing a total overhaul as to who will be a priority for enforcement and ultimately removal. I state again because I cannot, underestimate. Now the new categories include those who not only have been convicted of criminal offenses, but those who have been convicted or charged with any criminal offenses. Now, we don't know exactly at this moment in time how broad this administration will choose to implement this. Remember, we have talked about the weight of implementation and how it will contour these executive orders. But it is a marked change from what we have seen in prior both Republican and Democrats' administration of their enforcement priorities. The next piece I think that's very notable is that this executive order attempts to defund sanctuary cities from vital federal funding. The prohibitions that are written in the executive order relating to sanctuary cities are quite broad. They basically call for defunding of sanctuary jurisdictions claiming that it's under federal law. It's 8 U.S.C. 1373. However, 8 U.S.C. 1373 basically prohibits cities and municipalities from prohibiting the exchange of information with federal entities about immigration status. It does not prohibit individuals, law enforcement agencies, from complying with detainers or other elements. The way that it is written in the executive order is quite broad and brings into questions state and local power and larger constitutional questions. This issue also will likely be further litigated, I think, in the courts, and we'll see great addressment by Congress, and I think we'll hear more about that later. But suffice to say, we saw the first piece of litigation on this issue yesterday in San Francisco. A claim was filed about this particular sanctuary cities piece in the executive order. And as many of you know, the funding element is not an executive function. Rather, it's a congressional function. Congress has the power to appropriate and take away funds. So President Trump will need to go through Congress to fully implement this law. Nonetheless, it is a dramatic change from what we had seen in the prior administration, which itself was not always supportive of sanctuary cities, but did not threaten the level of withdrawing of funding that this executive order currently does. The third piece that kind of goes along, the third and the fourth piece about deputizing local law enforcement officers and returning secure communities go hand in hand with also the return of 287G. These are programs that were designed during the George W. Bush administration in an effort to ensure that local law enforcement and local communities worked aggressively with federal law enforcement officers on immigration questions. Many of these programs, while they were taken on during the Bush administration and continued during the Obama administration, they were ultimately dropped in part because of the large amount of litigation and liability that local municipalities faced when they were kind of trying to adhere to some of these laws. A return to this will see, I think, future litigation as well. The last piece that I think we as faith-based organizations should be concerned about is that the executive order on interior enforcement begins a process to impose civil fines and penalties on those who are found to be here in an undocumented state and also those who facilitated undocumented presence in the United States. So this is Section 6 of the executive order on interior enforcement. And it requires the Department of Homeland Security to issue guidance and regulations to assess fines and penalties against undocumented individuals and those facilitating their presence in the United States. We at this time do not know what this means. Again, it's a new order, so we don't know what type of regulations the Department of Homeland Security will be writing. But I will flag for people that this signals to us a return to some policies of targeting clearly the undocumented, but also those who offer assistance to the undocumented, and could signal new willingness by the Department of Homeland Security and possibly the Department of Justice to proceed with prosecuting and also civilly fining individuals who are seen to be aiding and abetting the undocumented. We are concerned about this provision, and we will work vociferously to monitor this and to push back on this, as we know it affects many on the call here and many who provide services to immigrants of varying status. And with that, I'm going to turn to talking a little bit about another executive order that we have seen, and it's on slide 9. Which is called possible public benefits. Okay, so.
Hey, Ashley.
Yes.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Before we move into this part, there looks like to be a couple of questions here. Can I ask them now or
okay? Sure.
So Michelle Knight asks, is it an order and not an action? It's an order and not an action, correct?
It's an order.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Was there confusion about that?
I think there was. So it's an order, not an action. Here's one from Richard Murphy. Are the criminal offenses just felonies?
No. At this time, no. It says any criminal offense.
Okay.
And that section, for Richard, that is Section 5 of the Executive Order on Interior Enforcement.
Okay. And then here's a question from Chuck Frost. What about traffic tickets?
So, again, the language says here any criminal offense. Do we know if traffic tickets are included? No, we don't at this time. I think that it would be... we don't know. We don't know how they're going to choose to interpret this, and I think that that's something that we are going to push aggressively internally with the administration on how broad exactly this executive order language is. I'm sorry, I don't have a more clear answer.
Okay, great. And let's see here. I think we're okay, so thanks, Ashley. Please, proceed, continue.
Moving on to slide number 9, which is entitled Possible Public Benefits, we want to just be very careful to say that we have not seen, to my knowledge, I did not check the news at 12:30, so if it's been signed, please let me know. But at this point in time, to my knowledge, we have not seen that this particular executive order is actually, going to happen. And we don't know if this is the exact text, but we wanted to make sure to get you as much information as possible based on what we're seeing. So with that caveat, I'm going to quickly discuss this executive order, and then we're going to move to talking about the executive order on refugee resettlement, which did happen on Friday. So the executive order text that we have received that has not been made executive order, and again, is draft text, significantly expands the type of public assistance that could become a ground of deportation and admissibility for public charge. There's this provision, as many of you know, relating to public charge. An individual cannot be considered someone who is a financial, does not contribute financially to our country, and it is a determining factor for immigration. Traditionally, the determination on this have had a certain type of benefit that has been determined that it would fall under that category. TANF is one, which is emergency cash assistance, and then also long-term health care. The draft language as proposed will radically augment the number of federal programs that would now come under this category, to include things like school lunch, more healthcare-related programs, a whole bunch of things that we're currently evaluating. It's a very disturbing, I think, development if it were to actually happen. The second piece is that it eliminates access to the child tax credit for many mixed immigration status families. As many of you know, this is a very important provision for a number of reasons. One, mixed status families, which normally are parents who are undocumented and maybe an older child who's undocumented and a younger child who was born here in the United States and therefore is a U.S. citizen. Both parents at this time, they are eligible to claim the child tax credit. They're eligible to claim the child tax credit for that U.S. citizen child, even if they themselves don't have a Social Security number. The draft language we have seen will eliminate that ability and will thus greatly harm these types of families that, have relied on that benefit and should be able to because of their U.S. citizen children. The last provision I think that, I'm going to highlight, there's a piece about some of the individuals who have worked in an undocumented fashion who later on are not allowed to access their Social Security benefits. But I want to highlight really quickly the last bullet on slide 9 about the number of reports that are required in this executive order. This goes back to what we've talked about implementation. While there are many draconian things that are listed in this possible public benefits executive order, it's very important to also notice what this order is trying to set up. It's trying to set up basically a series of reporting on how immigrants and refugees are costing our government system. And it's requiring also an amount of reporting that will provide, I think, attempts to provide a basis for why we should not fund these programs in general. One of the ones that I think we're very concerned about is obviously the long-term cost of the refugee admission program, and then foreign workers' impact on the Social Security Trust Fund. My colleague Matt's going to talk a little bit more about the refugee admission program later on, so I'll move forward. I wanted to just, since we're in the stage of the fact that this is a possible executive order that we haven't seen, we decided to give you some messaging just relating to this executive order if it does indeed happen. And that's on slide 10. So I ask that you change to slide 10. The title is Possible Public Benefits EO Continued. So here are some impacts that as you think about how to respond, these are some of the things that we have been thinking as we've evaluating that draft language. One is obviously that this possible executive order could prevent unification, family unification, and also separate families in the sense that if there's enough financial barriers for this for immigrants who are trying to legally immigrate here, families will not choose to do so because it'll be too financially onerous. The second is that it's going to harm the health and well-being of families. If families are ineligible to receive life-affirming services such as health care and lunch and nutrition programs, then certainly their ability to live healthy and productive lives are going to be affected. That everyone understands how important these programs are to the well-being of immigrants' families and lives. The third is a point that I think we really, as a community, need to really push back on, and this has to do with the reporting that I flagged for you earlier. this constant request for certain types of reporting to be framed in a certain way, requesting our government to do them, it's an attempt to perpetuate a false and negative assumption about immigrants and refugees, that they're a financial drain, that they are not a program that we should be supporting. And instead, it overlooks important cultural and economic contributions of immigrants and refugees that have been around as the forming history of our nation and will continue to do so. We must be vigilant to push back, particularly on this narrative. The last part I'll say, and again, we'll see this more in the refugee resettlement context, is that these are programs that were initiated under Republican and Democratic leadership and have been continuously supported under Republican and Democratic leadership. They are bipartisan. They are bipartisan in the Congress in their support, and they are bipartisan in the executive in their support. And the overhaul that could be proposed here goes against many accepted principles that have transcended Republican or Democrat. I'm going to turn it over to Matt, and I'm sure we'll have questions about this at the end.